Well, welcome everyone to the online Breaking of Bread. I've got a few words I'm going to share with you at this point of time. Nothing, you know, particularly deep and grandiose at this point, but I think the two main areas I'm wanting to focus on, I think, have very applicable lessons for us in the truth. And we'll no doubt find the humble bones in our body while we are considering what we're doing at this present time with the emblems, and also what we're doing within the next week, and considering how perhaps some of these thoughts will affect our lives, and lessons we can bring out from them. But firstly, the first of the two sections I'd like to concentrate on at the moment, just to bring a few small lessons out for us in preparation, is in John, that's the Gospel of John, chapter 7. We see here in John chapter 7 that Jesus once again is tackling the Pharisees, the teachers, so-called rather, teachers of the law of the day, about their unfortunate misgivings and inconsistencies they have with chopping and changing between what they believe and what is convenient for the Pharisees to put into place. In context there, we see in John chapter 7, verse 16, Jesus had just decided to come back to the Feast of Tabernacles, and he was about to talk to them in the temple courts there. And he says, "My teaching is not my own, it comes from him who sent me. If anyone chooses to do God's will, he will find out whether my teaching comes from God, or whether I speak on my own. He who speaks his own does so to gain honour for himself, but he who works for the honour of the one who sent him is a man of truth. There is nothing false about him. Has not Moses given you the law? Yet not one of you keeps the law. Why are you trying to kill me?" And then the crowd say, "You are demon-possessed," the crowd says. "Who is trying to kill you?" Of course, being very two-faced about that, they very much knew that there were many amongst them that were trying to kill him, especially the Pharisees. You know, the interesting point about this is in verse 21, I just want to concentrate on firstly. It says, "Jesus said unto them, I did one miracle, and you are all astonished. Yet because Moses gave you circumcision," though actually it did not come from Moses, but from the patriarchs, "you circumcise a child on the Sabbath. Now, if a child can be circumcised on the Sabbath, so that the law of Moses may not be broken, why are you angry with me for healing the whole man on the Sabbath? Stop judging by mere appearances and make a right judgment." That's very interesting, this. I guess Jesus, once again, really catches the Pharisees out at their own game. These are so-called teachers. Basically explaining the logic behind what they see as an exception, and an unquestioned exception, Christ underlines this logic problem they have, in that, quite happily, on the Sabbath, which of course we know is under the classic law of Moses, you aren't to do any works on the Sabbath. It is a day of rest. It says, "You let a child be circumcised on the Sabbath." Now we know under the Levitical law of Moses there that a child on the eighth day is a male child, obviously, is to be circumcised, and this is a custom that must be kept. But if a child is to be circumcised and it happens to land on the Sabbath day, the Pharisees and the teachers would certainly go ahead and circumcise this child, even if it had to be on the Sabbath. So we can see some exclusions, some exclusion laws going on here that really they're prioritizing, aren't they? We're prioritizing here that circumcision is more important than actually keeping the Sabbath. And this is exactly what Christ is looking at. He's saying, look, you will find an excuse on the Sabbath. You will prioritize your own priorities here to make sure you circumcise the child on the eighth day if it lands on the Sabbath, because you feel circumcision is more important on the Sabbath. But then Christ says, but hey, look what you're having a go at me at. You're having a go at me because what do I do on the Sabbath? You're talking about circumcision, but as it says there, why are you angry with me for healing the whole man on the Sabbath? So here we see the ridiculous rationale of the Pharisees here. That they're having a go at Christ, who of course is king of the Sabbath, you know, as far as what he came to be, who is healing, not just cutting off the small bit of representative flesh, but he's healing the whole man. And truly, isn't this really a lesson in itself to us, my dear friends, in that Christ, unlike the earlier days, he hasn't come to, you know, remind us of this little bit of flesh that needs to be cut off, an important part of the reproductive body. But he's actually come here to wholly and completely heal all. It's not just a reminder of something small in our lives, but it's also a reminder for us here and now that this little bit of flesh we shall be partaking of soon, that is the bread, that reminds us, a small snippet of the flesh that we must put away on a daily basis, Christ has come here to say, hey, I'm doing the whole lot. So in that sense, let us not think for a minute that this is just a little bit of bread that's reminding us of something. It really is nothing to do with this little bit of bread or little bit of circumcision, because Christ came to trounce all of that. He came to fulfill the law in its fullest. And this is exactly the point that the Pharisees and teachers kept missing the whole time, is that if the whole man can be completely healed on the Sabbath, why would you possibly have a go at someone that can completely heal the whole man if the people, the Pharisees, that is, quite excuse the fact that circumcision is allowed to be done. They allow it to be done on the Sabbath. So we can see the massive inconsistencies here. And of course it finishes on verse 24 there. It says, stop judging by mere appearances and make a right judgment. Make a right judgment there is make a divine judgment. Make a divine correct judgment. That's what it means. And how very true is the whole point of Moses' law, was to point forward to Christ and to glorify our Heavenly Father, as our dear, beloved Christ did through his whole life. And this is just one of the many examples in how, you know, he's not just taking the bull by the horns as such. He's, you know, taking the bull by the whole body, in the sense of the point of circumcision. He was the very point of putting away not just one part of flesh, but he is a representative here. We recognize he is completely healing the whole of us, inside and out, spiritually and soon to be physically. And we must remember that. I think too, in the little things that go on in our lives, you know, we often get bitter about silly little trivial things. Oh, they should have done this, they should have done that. Or if this person did this, they'd be better if they did that. We really need to look at the broader picture, don't we? And Christ has come to heal the whole person. Therefore, we must present ourselves to other people in that light to say, we are representatives of Christ and we're here to help you in any way possible, to help heal the whole person and not just pinpoint little things that might need to be cut off in that person's life. I think this is a great lesson for us in the not just the logic behind what Christ came to fulfill, but the point of his saving name is a sway, the tide, a flood of salvation that comes over all of us, not just fixing those small portions of little bits of fleshly thought, but it's a whole tide of loving sacrifice that heals us all every day. Well, that's just the little section on John chapter 7 I was wanting to cover, and I think the lessons there are truly, you know, they really do stand out as far as where our minds need to be in regards to fleshly thoughts and what needs to be put away, and the massive sacrifice that has been made that we can now think upon. And I think that's some marvellous lessons there. Now, just also briefly, I won't be much longer, it's just going to be a short one for tonight, for today. But just briefly too, if we turn over to, which we probably have read earlier here, in John chapter 9, rather, John chapter 9, we see under the heading from verse 35 of spiritual blindness. Now, just another lesson or two I'd like to draw out to feast our minds upon what we are going to partake of and beyond. Says here in verse 35, to the end of the chapter, Jesus heard that they had thrown him out. And when he found him, this of course is the man, the blind man that got healed. And they'd thrown him out. And this is the Pharisees. So when he heard them throwing them out, and when he found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" He's saying to the blind, the ex-blind man, rather, he now can see. And then the blind, ex-blind man, the man that can now see, says, "Who is he, sir?" the man asked. "Tell me so that I may believe in him." And Jesus said, "You have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you." And the man said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshipped him. And Jesus said, "For judgment I have come into the world, so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind." And then the Pharisees, getting their shirt in a knot about this, they say, "Some Pharisees were with him, heard him say this, and asked, 'What, are we blind too?'" Of course, a very rhetorical question, really, isn't it? Then Jesus said fittingly, "If you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you see, your guilt remains." I think this is an interesting point, isn't it, really? So a few little lessons we can bring out from this. On blindness. Now, Christ's argument here was also quite logical and defeated the Pharisees utterly, as he did before, a chapter or two before. The logic being, if you were blind, meaning spiritually blind, you would not be guilty of sin. And of course that is true. If they did not know better, if the Pharisees were completely ignorant of what they were doing, then sure, they could be get off scot-free. But unfortunately, because of the Pharisees and what they placate, here is where they trip themselves up. Of course, they're known, and quite happily known, and advertised as such, as leaders of the law, gurus of the law. The law, they run rings around the law. And so, therefore, Christ again catches them out of their own game. He says, "But now that you claim you can see," in other words, now that you claim you know the law, you are the gurus of the law, your guilt remains. And how true that is. How true it was then. Christ says quite amazingly, his insight is to say, your logic, your rationale has now beaten you, because you claim you are leaders of the law, and if you claim, this is your claim, then you are also guilty by that same law. And as we have read earlier on, or as it does say earlier on, there's nobody that keeps the law perfectly. So in that aspect, the Pharisees could possibly never be guilt-free, but yet they were certainly not the type to admit that. But isn't that amazing again? Their wonderful brother, Jesus Christ, he shows us truly by another rational, logical argument there, how that if a person is willing to step into the void there and say, hey, I know these things, I represent these things, I'm going to tell you what it's all about, then automatically that person becomes, you know, representative of what they believe. They are responsible for what they placate. And in doing so, Christ caught the Pharisees out. So, really, what are the lessons? They're pretty straightforward, aren't they, for us? And it's to do with blindness. We must represent what we teach. We must, in our lives, be symbols of what we preach. Obviously, we're not talking perfection here, and even as Christ said earlier on, you know, none of you will fulfill the law. And we are not expected of even the law of grace to be able to sit back and say, well, you know, we're really quite good at this. I mean, obviously the law of grace is quite the opposite, for the law of grace says, well, we know, God says, I know that you can't be good at it. You can give it your best try. That's why I send Christ, and through his name, I will give you grace. But we do need to make sure in our lives we represent truth, we represent integrity, so that what we're placating to others makes sense. But at the same time, we also need to make ourselves known to be human, not to relish in it, but to say, hey, this is what I believe. This is the spiritual law on which I love, but I'm also wholeheartedly reliant on the aspect of grace. And although I know what I should be doing, I often don't do it, and we pray for forgiveness for doing that. And this is the whole point of law of grace. But I think it's very important in our lives that we don't profess to be anything that we're not. That we realise that we truly will always have some kind of blindness. Whether it's on a daily activity or knowing where we're focused, knowing what the next spiritual project is. But as long as we don't profess to be anything we're not, we can wholeheartedly come to the throne of grace, as we are doing now too, to say, hey, I know where I should be, but I also know that I often don't get there. Please, my dear God, through Christ's good grace, help me to achieve a little bit every day so that I can say to other people, or in our actions, we can say, yes, we do have some insight, but by no means are we perfect. And now, because we do know what needs to be done, we cannot slack off and say, oh, well, I don't need to, you know, feel guilty because, you know, I'm going to be safe. Well, that's completely wrong. I think guilt actually does play a major part of a role in our life. And that guilt helps us and moves us and motivates us to realize that we do need to stay in the straight and narrow as much as possible. Anyway, well, that's really all I have for today, tonight. Just some ideas, some lessons on the aspect of circumcision and really the fact that Christ came to do the ultimate, if you like, circumcision, except in the aspect of our whole bodies, in that we, through baptism, have been completely and utterly circumcised. All flesh has been destroyed, so that we may restart, be reborn into our spiritual aspect of grace, in which grace is now the thing that saves us. And we must remember that in all we do, especially with the emblems. And also the act of blindness, that we're not pretentious, that we realise that if we put our hands up and say, I represent this, we must also follow through with such. But at the same time, we must not give people the idea that we're really perfect at what we do, and that we're gurus and leaders, therefore only follow me, follow me. Of course, that's completely wrong. We follow the one true God and what he has to teach us through this wonderful word. Anyway, I hope that some of these lessons have been helpful in representing some kind of objectivity now before the emblems, that we can remember what we're here for, remember the flesh that needs to be completely wiped off as it has been. We need to keep it in check and also make sure that we don't represent the blind, hypocritical Pharisee to others in our lives, that we need to keep that in check also. Okay, thank you for now.